All right, well, we are here interviewing Colin Diedrich at the University of Pittsburgh. It's June 19th, 2017. Lead interviewer is myself, Jessica Martucci, and assisted by Greg Waters. And we're here from the Chemical Heritage Foundation as part of our Scientists with Disabilities Oral History Project. So thank you, Colin, for agreeing to be interviewed by us.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, I'm just going to start off at the beginning, which is where we usually start, and ask about when and where you were born and who your parents were and all that sort of background stuff.
Okay. So I was born in St. Louis in 1983, and my parents are Vicky and Tom Diedrich, and my mom is an artist, and my dad was vice president of a wholesale company that my grandfather actually started. And I also have a twin sister and an older brother, and that's the very basic stuff.
All right, well, tell me a little bit more about your parents' backgrounds. So you said your mom is an artist.
My mom's an artist.
Did she go to school to train, or is she self-taught?
Yeah, so she went to KU, so Kansas University, and she actually got a degree in occupational therapy, but always loved painting, and I think she used some of that artist stuff in some of her occupational therapy. And so she did that for years, until my older brother was born, I think, and where she was able to be full-time stay-at-home mom. And she always painted. And her and my grandfather, actually, my grandfather's a woodworker, and so not only did he start this business that my dad worked for and his other sons too, but my grandfather was this woodworker, and him and my mom would have this like Vicky and Dad art where they, my grandfather would, it was sculptures, and so my grandfather would make woodworkings, whether it was just like things to hang or just like little tchotchkes and stuff, and my mom would paint them and stuff. So that was pretty cool. And my grandmother owned an art gallery for a while, and they all sold stuff there and did that. So that was basically all the things that my mom was doing, I think, when all of us were growing up. Now she's playing grandma really hard, which is pretty sweet. And my dad, he got a general studies degree. And I'm laughing because it's funny. It's my dad, general studies. And my mom and dad met in college, so they met at KU. And then he started working for my grandfather, and so then they were able to just have a pretty decent business for years. And my dad just retired last year, and he is grandpa-ing really hard. And not my kid. I don't have kids, but my siblings all have kids, so they like that a lot. And so that's just the basic, I think, basics of my mom and dad.
When were your parents born? And were they born in St. Louis?
My dad was born in 1953. I think I have these dates right. 53 in either some city in Kansas. Maybe, I don't know if it was. Was it Lawrenceville? Is that where KU is?
Sounds about
something. Right. Some place in Kansas. Yeah. He grew up in, maybe it was Kansas City. I'm not sure. And my mom was born in St. Louis.
Okay.
So I have a lot of family in St. Louis where I grew up.
And when was your mom's birthday?
1955.
Okay. And what was your mother's maiden name?
Ginsburg.
And so her whole family is from the St. Louis area? Is that what you
said? Yeah, yeah. Or like lived there for decades and decades.
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone is still there.
Mm-hmm. And do you mind telling me a little bit more about your is it your paternal grandparents that had the business?
Oh, maternal. Yes, okay. My mom's parents.
So your mom's parents. And so had they been native Missourians, or had they come there from somewhere else?
Yes. Their parents, so my great-grandparents, they immigrated from, I think, Russia. I'm not totally sure. And my grandparents have been, they were both in St. Louis for, I mean, they've been in St. Louis their whole lives. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather has really interesting stories and stuff. And you asked about the company?
Mm-hmm.
And so he went through, like, his father owned a few local shops, like, in St. Louis, that were pretty successful, like, on, like, a local level. And so he got his bearings, I think, from my great-grandfather, which I never met her, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then through, I don't know, a handful of different, like, circumstances, and, like, over the next, like, few decades after my grandfather was working for his dad, and after he served time and did was in the Korean War for a bit, but when he came back, he started a few different wholesale companies, and it was literally just like buying, when companies make too much stuff and they can't sell it, my grandfather would say, I'll buy it for super cheap, and then he sells it for cheap, you know, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, he did that, and that company went through a handful of, he had to start a few companies at a few different times because of, like, he, like, sold it at one point, but sold it for unregistered stock at one point, and so then there was, like, an issue with that, and then everything fell through, and he didn't have the company to that. So it was one of those things, and he had to start over again, and mm-hmm. he ended up with a company called Closeouts with Class, and that was the one that has been around for maybe, I don't know if it's, like, 30 years, but maybe a long time. And we have to say that, like, we, as in, like, my siblings and cousins and stuff, have been so fortunate. We understand, like, our privilege of, like, you know, like, our parents were able to pay for our college. And so, like, that's something that, like, most people don't have, right? And so, and it was all really because of my grandpa, you know, and starting this company and stuff. And it recently closed, like, last year. And so that was really, really hard. But, you know, he was able to give a pretty good life to his kids and grandkids and stuff. So
cool.
Yeah.
And so what about your dad's family? Are they part of your life at all?
Not as much now. It was hard because they lived in Kansas City or Lawrenceville. Wait, where does Lawrence... where is... wherever
KU is. You're asking the
wrong
person, yeah.
We'll
fact check
something.
That.
Whatever. Yeah, fact check my inability to know where family members live or where KU is located. It was really nice. We were able to go see them. I like Christmas time. I grew up Jewish, but they are some Christian sect. I don't know. And I know it's funny. People ask me, and I'm like, I was like, well, they're Christian. I'm like, what? It's all the same, right? And apparently, it's not. But we would always go and celebrate Christmas with them, which I thought was nice. And so like that was pretty cool. But again, it was harder because like we see my mom's side of the family. You know, we would see them once a week. We actually did family dinners once a week. You know, all growing up, and even when we all go back in town and stuff. And then you know, my dad's side of the family, we saw just a lot less and stuff. So that's definitely I think a big difference.
Yeah.
Of just like geography, mm-hmm. really.
So what year were you born? So your parents met in college and then moved. Did they get married when they were still in college and then decided to move?
I think
they
got married after college.
Okay.
I'm sure they did. And so they were at KU but moved back to St. Louis, or my mom moved to St. Louis and my dad moved with her. And so I was born in 83.
And you were... you were a twin.
A twin, yeah.
And you have an older brother.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So when was your oldest brother born?
He was born in 81.
Okay.
And
what's his name?
His name is Justin. And yeah, so it's my older brother, just like a little background, I guess, about my brother and sister. My brother's super smart, and he's like the super smart one in the family. And he was always like really interested in, and I guess is really interested in like how things work and stuff. And he actually ended up going to medical school, and so he's a clinician now, and he lives in California and stuff. And so it was pretty cool being able to grow up with, you know, Justin, seeing all the kind of the cool stuff that he did. And then also all of the teachers really liked Justin, so then when the twins were coming up, we always had like an extra advantage part of that when you have a good older brother. And then my twin sister, she's also super smart, and my brother and sister, we both were all like really close. I think something that's a little different with Carrie, or my twin's name is Carrie, is that, you know, we were always in classes together, or in the same grade and stuff, and so we'd hang out, and we always got along really well, and still do, and so I think the first time that we were ever really apart was in college, and so that was one thing where I was like, oh, Carrie's not going to be around, that's weird, and she ended up going to Maryland Institute College of Art, and I guess I didn't say this, but my brother went to Case Western, for med school, and so my sister went to MICA, and she majored in like sculpting and printmaking, I think. And she ended up, after she graduated, she ended up moving to Xi'an, China, for a year to volunteer there with our brother-in-law. They were just dating at the time, and then he applied to law schools while he was in Xi'an, and applied and actually got in at Pitt. And so I was currently here in 2006, and so I really wanted him to get in here and decided to go here. And so for the 4 years that he was here, because he got a dual degree, so it took 4 years, I was also in graduate school. So there was this nice overlap where I was like, oh, I didn't think this was ever going to happen again. Which that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so we're all pretty close, really close with my siblings. And it's also pretty cool, too, that they, my sister and brother, they both have two kids. So it's nice because, I don't know, my wife and I, we're not thinking about kids very much. Mm-hmm. So it's nice that there are these little ones running around. And then when they're too wild and stuff, we can go to your parents and then go and watch TV or drink or something irresponsible.
Right. So you you mentioned like having a pretty extended family and lots of cousins and like family dinner once a week. So were there any, I mean, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the influence of your extended family on your childhood?
So we were all really close, and my grandparents and my one set of cousins and aunt and uncle and us, we all lived on the same street, and we were always like really physically close to each other, and we also got along really well, which was fortunate. And I think it was always nice, though, that we did a lot more together as a family than I realized was normal. And this wasn't until like my senior year of high school that I was taking one of those like senior transition classes. It's just like a joke. And I remember the teacher at the time was like, oh, who here has dinner with their family, you know, at least once a week? And I was like, of course, we do it 5 days a week, or like 6 days maybe. And then he kept going up and up, and my hand was the only one up. And I'm like, what is going on? this is weird? Like, I'm the weird one? Like, everybody else is weird. And so my nuclear family, we always have dinner together, and we're always, like, pretty close. And then the extended family would do dinner. It ended up being, like, on Sunday nights, you know, where... And, yeah, so that was really awesome. I think I've always been impressed with my, like, grandfather's, like, work ethic and how he, like, created a business, and it was successful enough to, like, essentially, you know, employ... I don't actually know numbers, but I don't know, 50, 100 people maybe. And, you know, we never wanted anything. And that was all, I think, really because of him. And also, I think just always being able to confide in just a bunch of different people for different things. I just think that that's always been really, just really nice. Even with like my cousins that are younger, you know, I have some like 21-year-old cousins, and then I have some maybe 36-year-old cousins. You know, I'm 33, so there's like a wide range.
And you mentioned that you were raised Jewish. So was your mother? Was it your mother's family?
Yeah. Jewish? So is that side Jewish? Yeah, yeah.
And so, how much of a part of your life was
very? We got B'nai HaMitzvah. So my sister and I, we did that, and so that was when we were 13, and like a High Holy Day Jews. That was as far my family is. I am not religious anymore, but I take like pride in my Judaism. More like ethnically, where like I feel like, you know, it's your responsibility as a Jew, whether you believe it or not, to like make sure people aren't persecuted. You know, and it's just really hard, especially in today's world. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing where it's like, you know, I think that I never really felt, or I haven't felt very Jewish in a really long time, more than just like ethnically, mm-hmm. Until, you know, really like lately, where I'm like, oh, this is, there's a lot of things that are happening, and, you know, and I don't, you know, nobody deserves to be persecuted, and I get extra offended, especially when Jews are really horrible to Muslims, and I'm just like, you, it's like, your job is to make sure that persecution never happens. Don't do that,
right.
You know. And so, yeah, anyway, so I think that's one thing I think that I've just really, you know, taken with me. But I have to say that, honestly, like, religion is just not a big part of my life.
Was it important to your mother's generation? Like, do you think it's kind of decreased over time? Or
I do think it's decreased over time, but probably within the average decrease over right. in Americans, right? My mom is very spiritual. Like, we joke a lot. Like, she's, everything's God's miracle, you know? And just, she has, like, teal hair stripe. She's, mom's awesome. She's, like, this spiritual hippie weirdo lady. But it's my mom, so it's super cool. She's just very much like, look, she's like, she'll be like, Colin, look at this stick bug. This stick bug is, and this is how she's talking, like, this stick bug, this is a miracle. How could God not make this? This is a miracle. It looks like a stick. And I'm like, Mom. I'm like, but that's evolution. Yeah, it hides well. It looks like a stick. And then another thing we do, this is just because my mom's awesome. She also will regularly tell me that, that snowflakes are miracles, just because they're cool. And she's an artist, just like, you know, all the shapes and stuff. And she's like, no two snowflakes are alike, and just very fun about that. And that's one thing that I think is real funny, and like that I've had to like adjust, because I was like, Mom, I think you need to raise your threshold on miracle. But it's like, well, if someone can like get this much joy out of life, which is something that I think I really have taken from my mom. Where we would say, tell her that she's like, sucks the marrow out of life. She's like one of those, if you have chicken, she's vegetarian now, but like, you break the chicken and suck the marrow out. Super gross. It was like kind of delicious. And so she's like, she like sucks the marrow out of life. And then my dad wasn't very religious. He never converted to Judaism, but for all intents and purposes, when we were raised Jewish, and he probably considers himself Jewish, like, you know, as much as, I don't know. I just tell people I'm just not a very good Jew, so.
Was there a substantial Jewish community in St. Louis, or was it something that was sort of marginal in that culture?
You know, it wasn't until college that I realized that there weren't a lot of Jews around, and so I think it was substantial in the suburbs, in like the upper middle class suburbs that where like I grew up, and like we always had a lot of Jewish friends, not because they were Jewish, but like because it was we must have met because of I think Sheremeth was our synagogue, excuse me, and I think we met there, and then or like the parents met or something. But, you know, I had like a really good core group of friends, you know, all from like elementary school, all through high school and stuff. And I didn't realize how odd it was that a lot of them were Jewish too, are Jewish, were Jewish, you know. And so, yeah, that's definitely one thing that's, I don't know, this is a little different, I guess. Mm.
So did you do any extracurricular sort of activities as a child, like Boy Scouts or camping or sports?
Yeah, so I was always very active. I was the kid that had too much energy and was really wild and rambunctious and did everything I could for attention. And so I think that kind of like pushed me more towards sports. And I was never great at any sports, but I was always had a lot of endurance. And it wasn't until, I think in middle school, I started to run. And I wasn't good at running, I ran in middle school and high school, and I ran in college, and it was all cross country. I also wrestled for a little bit in high school, and I went on the swim team. And even after that, I was on the pom-pom squad at my high, you know, pom-poms?
No.
Yeah. Well, they have those little fluffy thing.
Oh, the fluffy
pom. Okay. Yeah, pom. I learned that it's called pom pom. So
okay.
I was on the dance team for, I think it was for a season or two. I did that for attention. And in high school, I'm kind of jumping around. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in high school, I was joking with a friend of mine that I was going to try out for the team because there weren't any guys on it. And then the principal of the school found out I was doing it, and she found out I was doing it as a joke and told me not to. And so then I was like, well, now I have to. So I did it with a friend of mine, Aaron, and we did it. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We got the attention that we wanted. I guess I feel like I'm out 33, I can admit, like, sometimes you do things for attention. And so that was fun. You know, I enjoyed it, but I think my biggest passion, like extracurricular, was always running. I mean, that's the thing that kind of like really leads me to, it gives me my focus, it helps me just like get through the day. And also, I really like the idea of in running, I really like the ability to, you can like literally push yourself until you can't anymore. And those are things that I really like thrive on. It's something that like is tangible and physical. And it's like, oh, can I push myself until I throw up? Or can I push myself until I literally can't go any further? You know, like those things. And which I think is like in the running community, those things are like, oh, yeah, this is kind of cool. Yeah, do that. And then on the outside, it's like, why would you run to hurt yourself? And I was like, because I wanted to see if I could. And I did. So I think that it's mostly running. Running then and now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to start asking questions about school.
Okay.
So did you go to like a preschool program, or were you at home until kindergarten? When did you first enter school?
You know, I think I was in preschool. I think it was Lucky Day. I think that's what it was called. And I'm pretty sure I was in class with Ozzie Smith. He was a cardinal, with his kid or grandkid, or maybe kid. I think, because that was a big deal. I never watched sports and didn't really care. But I think parents liked that. I did that preschool and then just public school throughout.
Mm-hmm. And so how were your early schooling experiences?
I was more conflicted, mm-hmm. I think. Let's see here. And I'll have to like double check all the dates and stuff. But it was very clear that I wasn't reading at the level I should be. And in first grade, one of my teachers, Mrs. Tucker, she went and talked to my parents about this, or she talked to my mom and was like, look, you know, I think Colin is like, he's behind in reading, and I want to tutor him in the summer. And so then that was my first like taste of like getting tutored and stuff. Because I always tried really, really hard, and like my sister, things come naturally to her, and my brother as well, and they were always super smart, and I wanted to be smart like them. And so I always just like wanted to learn more, but there was this, words are just hard for me still, and they were really hard back then when I didn't understand why, like, I was adding in sentences, or like adding in words, or adding in letters, or taking them out, or truncating them, or pushing them together. You know, there was all these things I was doing with letters I didn't really understand, and my parents didn't understand. And so that was in first grade that I went with Mrs. Tucker. And Mrs. Tucker was wonderful, and she tutored me in reading and writing all summer long. And then it was in second grade, it was a newer teacher, and I was in class with like all my friends, and like I said before, I was like really rambunctious and wild and stuff, and it doesn't just go away. And so that like continued, and me being wild and not paying attention, and I really lost a lot of the progress I made reading-wise. And so then when my parents found out about that, then that's when they were pretty pissed off. They ended up getting me private tutoring or at school. So like for like our home period or whatever the period was, I was taken out of class and I would literally just work on reading, and that helped me get back up to where I was, like at least in the summer. And then, so like reading and writing has always been really difficult. Spelling, I remember times where I was in like a music class, and I remember breaking down and like having a panic attack when I was in first, second, or third grade, I don't know, where, you know, one of my friends was like, Colin, what's going on? And I was just so worried about the time test. Remember those little multiplication tables, and you just have to, I mean, it's not tables, but the multiplication test where there's like 100 and you just answer as many as you can.
Yeah.
And it went horrible. It was a nightmare. And so I remember, you know, I specifically remember that, because that's just something like I just don't process information that fast, and like I knew it, but I didn't really understand why. And then it wasn't until I think it must have been in third grade that my mom was given advice that I get privately tested, because she didn't want to initially, and she got me tested for learning disabilities, but like was able to cover the $1,000 or $2,000 cost that, you know, that it was. And then I was like officially diagnosed, which was helpful. But the school, like I think this was in elementary school at this time, like they didn't accept it. And so then I had to get privately tutored through the school using the diagnosis that my mom was able to get me. I got tested and I was given my diagnosis, and I don't know what the actual diagnosis was then, but you know, written expression issues, reading disorder, I'm sure it was within that realm. I was trying to get, or my parents were trying to get me through an IEP. And so they were trying to get me the individual plan, and like by that time I was already seeing a tutor weekly that was helping me study, and I was always studying a lot, and so I was passing all my classes, and I was like a B and A student, and so the school said that like I didn't deserve accommodations because I wasn't failing, and so that was really difficult. And so then what my mom had to do, and she did a lot of this like on like in the background, you know, where I wasn't, you know, privy to at the time, I don't think. But she was the one who was like, you know, she like fought with like administration over this. And so then eventually I was still able to get accommodations. And it's difficult because like, you know, when you're a kid, you know, I've had this really positive environment like growing up and stuff. And but like, you know, when a school says, oh, no, you can only get accommodations, you know, if you're doing poorly, then essentially that means that like, oh, well, you're dumb, or like you're not, you know. So that's the stuff that you like internalize. Mm-hmm. So that was really difficult. But I kind of leaned into a lot of these my learning disabilities and stuff. I was always able to get with the tutor that I was seeing, and she was a special ed tutor. You know, and the techniques that I learned, you know, and over 12 years, I mean, from like first grade to 12th grade. I think I saw this specific tutor from 3rd grade to 12th grade. You know, I feel like that was the best thing that, like, prepared me for everyday life, really, and work. But, like, academically, like, things were always harder, or I just had to spend more time. But I was always the student that did my homework, and I always, like, worked really hard, and I always wanted to get good grades, and it was, like, similar to, like, what I was saying about running, is, like, pushing myself, because reading was always so hard. I would, like, push myself and be like, oh, can I get an A on this test? And a lot of times it wasn't for, like, learning the material. It was just like, oh, well, I just want to prove it to myself. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I really wasn't that passionate about any coursework, I don't think. I just liked learning generally. And so that was, like, academic stuff. So it was hard and stressful, but I feel like through the help that I received and my family, that was it. That was good. And, you know, and, like, there were times, too, where my parents, you know, my parents and I would fight a lot, or, like, even with my siblings. My parents about, like, homework and doing work and stuff, and they didn't understand why things were taking me so long. And it wasn't until they met with one of the psychologists that diagnosed me. It wasn't until then that the psychologist was like, all right, you guys no longer are allowed to do homework with Colin. You know, it wasn't until then. And so then it was one of those moments where it was like, oh, you know, we don't understand, you know, like, they didn't understand what was going on.
Right.
And that's when they, like, were able to, like, hire, I guess this was 3rd grade, because that's when they hired Kathy, who's my tutor for, you know, 9 years, I guess. So that was really helpful. And also, I think, help our relationship, because I remember times, like, you know, reading and, you know, my parents not understanding what, like, why are you adding words? Why aren't you paying attention? You know, I remember fighting with my dad about that, and mm-hmm. or, like, getting really frustrated with my mom and stuff. And so it's hard when, like, the people that are helping you the most, and then you, like, turn on them, you know. At that time I didn't realize it, but the tutor was really helpful with that.
Yeah. And so you stayed with the same tutor throughout your elementary and into high school
years. Yeah.
What were the things that she, you know, tools wise, what did she give you that was helpful? Or was it just about the, like, extra time?
I think it was more than that. It was learning different study skills. I think the primary thing was, hey, it's okay you have learning disabilities, which I feel like that's like the foundation of, hey, if you want to, I don't really like the term overcoming your learning disability, because it doesn't go away. But if you're going to work with your disability or overcome it or to work with it despite your learning disabilities, you're getting this stuff. But it's not even despite. It's you have these learning disabilities and you can also be successful. But the first step of that is, like, saying it's okay. Like, it's okay that you have this. And also, at that time, she wasn't saying, like, hey, you're not good at reading. It's like, oh, you can be better at reading, you know, and that, you know, that type of mentality, I think, was really helpful. And so that was, like, really important. Another thing, though, that was important with that is the study skills that I learned, and they were very obsessive, or I became very obsessive over them, which I had to do. And it was highlighting in certain colors, and it was like blue is a definition or is a vocab word, and orange is a definition. Yellow is just a normal fact, and orange right after yellow describes the fact more in depth, or orange after a definition describes that, you know, word. And so then I would have, you know, my I was always very good at highlighting. You know, when the kids first learn, it's always, everything's highlighted, and it's just completely. I was always very good at it, and I can, like, just look at the page, and then I would say, oh, okay, these are the vocab words I need to know, and then I would make flashcards, or these are just the general facts and stuff. And so I was making flashcards and highlighting and stuff, you know, in elementary school, and I took that all the way through high school. Mm. And so I think those were some of, like, the major things. And just understanding that I need to be in a distraction or reduced environment, I mm-hmm. think that's really important. as well, you know. And it's just, I think a lot of that, and always, I was also always held, like, accountable for my work. And that was always really important, I think, too, because I didn't want to upset Kathy. And so then it was like, oh, I need to make sure I have all my homework done. And I think there was a rule, and I can't totally remember this, but I think there was a rule with Kathy saying that we weren't, like, the whole point wasn't to do homework with her. It was have the homework done and have, like, the few questions that you need. And so it was very, like, stringent stuff. But, yeah, I think that was very helpful.
And when you were getting tutoring, it sounds like in the beginning it was really focused exclusively on reading. Did it change over time as your subjects grew, or was it always reading focused?
Well, reading and writing, mm-hmm. both. I think those are the primary focuses. And then I think with just like more memorization stuff, you know, because a lot of high school is just, when did this war happen? Who fought in it? It's all just, you have to just repeat things verbatim. And so yeah. Then that stuff was really difficult. And so then it was, okay, you got to make flashcards, or you have to write down these notes. And, oh, well, if I'm not learning by just looking at the flashcards, I learn better when I write it out. And so then I would just rewrite some stuff again and again, just to get the names right. And so, yeah, so I think it probably progressed, but the majority of it, I think, was reading. But I can't remember, like, when I was in high school going to Kathy, if we would sit down and just, like, read passages. I don't think that was the case. Mm-hmm. I think that it was like, oh, I don't understand this. Can you explain this to me, you know, in the homework that we were doing, mm-hmm. I think.
Was Kathy specifically trained to work with students with disabilities?
She was a special ed teacher. So I think so. I'm not totally sure. But other parents from these other organizations I'm working with ask me that question, too, because I guess now with things are so specific. Mm-hmm.
So were there any favorite subjects of yours in elementary school, like before you went into high school? Did you enjoy any particular subject over any
I mean,
other?
I always really liked history. I think those were my favorite. That was my favorite for a really long time. And it was just, like, what happened. I mean, I still have some, like, drawings of, like, the Boston Tea Party. They're very poor drawings, but they're also kind of amazing. I always really liked history, and then even high school, I think I liked it a lot more. I always wanted to understand how things worked, and so then that's, the sciences and stuff were interesting to me, but there was nothing special. Honestly, and I didn't, I don't know, I was always so active. I liked gym a lot. I wish I had a gym class now, right? it was really pretty broad, but I think history was really, that was the subject I really liked.
Hmm. And what did you do during the summers when you were a kid, before you were working age?
So I still got tutored all summer. That was very important. My tutor, or Kathy, she would give us homework. For a while, I was going to tutoring. It was like one of my friends and I, a friend who have similar learning disabilities. And so that was interesting. And then for a bunch of summers, there was a sleepaway camp called Camp Sabra. And that was a Jewish camp. So I've always been surrounded by a lot of Jews, I think. And so that was really cool. And that was probably from elementary school through early high school, I think. And that was always a lot of fun. And so, all of us, the Jewish kids would all go to that camp. And it was like a two-week to a month-long sleepaway camp, which was always pretty cool. So a lot of, like, activities and stuff to do. And then I think really just mostly for summers, I was just trying to be, like, really active and stuff, you know.
So when you went to middle school, oftentimes middle school is, like, a rough time for everyone. Was middle school rough for you,
you know,
at all?
And this is sad, because I joke a lot about my wife about this, is that school, I was always very well liked. And I always had like a bunch of acquaintances and a handful of like good friends and a few people I really, you know, I was real close with. And so it wasn't. And like, I can't, like, I understand that. But school, socially for me, school wasn't, was never that bad, honestly. And I think beyond the normal awkward, I don't know how old you are, 12 or 13, 14, whatever old you are in middle school, like that stuff. And when you're a really wild kid, getting in trouble, but I always, I would get in trouble, but I never did anything, I don't know, that bad, I don't think. But it was just being really obnoxious or like having any issues with authority and stuff. But issues with authority up until I'm actually going to get in trouble. And that was like, in middle school, really. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I was just really fortunate in that respect, really.
And all through the sort of early part of your childhood before high school, as you were sort of going through all of this with, you know, confronting and learning to deal with your learning disability, you'd mentioned, you know, that your brother and sister were both like really, really smart and that things came pretty easily to them.
Yeah.
Did that create like tensions or,
you know,
like disagreements in the household because you had to work really, really hard to get your work done and they were sort of like,
sure,
I'm finished and now I'm going to go
okay
out and play?
Well, so here's an example, I think. Since I was always so wild, this is, I guess, when I was in middle school, or I don't know, still wild, but like I can contain it, I can fake it. But I think in elementary school, you know, I was always really wild and stuff and rambunctious. And so my parents started like a sticker program where I had a big poster and I was like, did you do this thing sticker? Did you do this? And so I had the sticker thing and I would get a prize, you know, so they had to essentially bribe me, you know, as upper middle class, a white Jewish family does. They did that. And I remember where my parents remember and they would tell me that like, you know, Carrie and Justin would be like, well, why is Colin get prizes, you know? And my parents would be like, well, this is good for Colin. Like, Colin needs this, so just, like, back off, normal kids. So that was one thing. My dad tells the story about us, like, I don't know, he was doing, like, yard work, and I was, like, trying to help or something. We were outside, and this is elementary school, some, I don't know, maybe like fourth or fifth grade, maybe. And he tells a story about, like, we were talking about Justin and Carrie and how Justin was always so smart and my sister is really smart. She's also like this incredible artist. Like, she's always been able to, you know, when she was really little, she was drawing way better than she should have been able to. It was like that thing, or sketching, or whatever it's called. And so we were talking about that, and I remember my dad tells me, because I don't remember this actual story, but he was like, you looked up at me and you were like, so if Justin's really smart and Carrie's so good at art, like, what am I good at? You know, and when my dad tells the story, he gets choked up, which is funny because he's very waspy. So I'm like, eh. So I like when he tells the story. It's funny. I don't remember what he told me that day. But I think one thing, though, is like he was always saying that like I was always really good with people, like understanding people and stuff and could get along with people and stuff like that, which I didn't understand that was a skill set until I started actually working. And like, that is a skill set. I'm glad I have that. But it was nice, and I joke with my dad that it was good that he was able to think on his feet. So there clearly were times that I had issues, or like I wanted to be like them. And I think even, like, there were times too when, you know, my sister, she made the 100 absences club, and she got a 4.0 her senior year. And so if you miss like 100, like, we had block courses, so it was like 3 courses one day and 4 courses the next day. And so if you miss 100 of those, then you become on the 100, the 100 absentee, whatever idiot thing she wanted to get. And so she got it. So she's super smart, and she was able to skip a lot of classes and stuff. But that was stuff that I never did. And so I think that there's probably some envy that I had to that, to be like, wait a minute, why could you do that? And she would, like, skip stuff to go to, like, the art room to do art things or hang out with her boyfriend, who is now her husband and brother-in-law. So, but, yeah, so I think that there definitely were times. But I think we were always involved in such different things. My brother, it was clear he wanted to go into, it was clear he wanted to be a clinician early on and wanted to do doctor things. My sister always was into art, and I just really like sports and like running and whatever. And so it was, we never really, our interests never really collided. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so anyway, so I think that like we're all pretty close, and I don't think there was much animosity there, but like from some of the stuff that my dad said, that there clearly was, but it didn't leave that big of a mark on me, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. So I think, because you sent me several things that you've written about your life, because you had mentioned that you're working on a memoir.
Yeah, yeah.
And so at one point, I think you mentioned when you transitioned into middle school or high school, there were problems with getting the school to actually provide the services that you needed.
Yeah, yeah.
So could you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, so that was, I'm not totally sure on all the dates of it, but I had my diagnosis. So I had my, at that time I had my, the school diagnosis from elementary school, but you need to get retested. And so they didn't want to retest me because I was getting A's and B's. And so then that was stuff where my mom had to fight for that. And then eventually I ended up, there was a meeting with my mom and dad and the administration and some head people, and my tutor came in, because this was all supposed to be like IEP stuff, where I was going to get like the individual plan that was specific to my needs and like the reasonable accommodations. And they still didn't want to give me accommodations. And so then my mom went to the head of special services of Parkway School District and was like, look, like my son's diagnosed and he deserves these accommodations and you're not getting him accommodations. And so then he told my mom that she was just the standard. It was a very jerk thing to say. It was something like, oh, you're just a typical West County mother, which is the area that I grew up in, upper middle class area. You're the typical West County mother that can't accept the fact that her son has a low IQ. And so my mom screams at him, like, well, what if my son has a high IQ but is, you know, has learning disabilities, and, like, stormed out and went directly to whoever his boss was, because, like, the head went to, like, the head district, which was, and, like, refused to leave until this person, whoever, I don't remember who she was, saw my mom. And then my mom was like, look, like, I, whatever this guy's name was, I can't remember, you know, said that I couldn't do this. We have these accommodations that he's supposed to get. The school doesn't want to do this. I need this meeting now. And so then it was like the following week or something. And so everything was set up. We were able, or I was able to get like those accommodations. And what was so important with those accommodations in high school, I needed to have like a documented accommodations if I wanted to get them in college. Mm. And so then after that meeting, I think, I had to get diagnosed again in order for that diagnosis to carry over for college. So I was diagnosed 3 times, I think, maybe 4 times for it. Yeah, so... By separate people, yeah. One thing's hard with, like, invisible disabilities just in general is that, like, it's hard to prove. You know, and there can be a lot of, like, subjectiveness to it. But one issue that I think in the learning disability space is that, you know, you have to keep... Why do you have to keep re-getting tested? And just fast-forwarding, a few decades. Like, I started taking classes here for a certificate in disability law studies, and it's through the law school. And when I met with the disability office, they told me, they were like, well, you know, we don't still have your old disability stuff on file because we throw that away after 5 years or 7 years. So when I first came here in 2006, and they said, okay, so yeah, you can still get accommodations. But if you want to get, if you want to like turn the certificate into a master's, so it's 15 credits versus 30 credits, then you'll probably have to get diagnosed again. And I was like, it doesn't, I was like, you guys accepted my diagnosis. Learning disabilities don't go away. And it would be, you know, $1,500 out of my pocket if I got tested again. Or maybe a little more or less, I don't know. And so it's just one of those things where it's like, there are these, the way the law has it, and a lot of policies in universities is that, you know, you're only allowed to, or like the diagnosis exists for a certain number of years. But like at what point when you're an adult does it not, you know? And so I think that's one thing that I've always like had to deal with. But I've been fortunate with my college, my undergrad and graduate school, and coming back here, Pitt's pretty good about it, so.
Wow, I didn't realize that it was an out-of-pocket cost to get like the test for learning disability diagnosis.
Well, it depends. So this is another thing that happened in elementary school, is my mom, when she first started discussing this about, or when a teacher told my mom, oh, you should get Colin tested for learning disabilities. And so my mom went back and forth, and my dad, they were like, well, I don't want Colin labeled, and this might have been in first grade. So a few years pass, they get the tutor and stuff, and it's like, oh, well, we can deal with this ourselves. But then what happened? So then in elementary school, so this was like a few years after, oh, we can handle this ourselves. School starting to get a lot harder, and I'm having these issues, and it's like my parents are coming around to like, oh, well, maybe a diagnosis would be okay. And one thing that my parents started asking about that, or my mom did, and she was like, okay, well, why don't you, or a counselor actually in the school had a son who was dealing with some of the similar things, but was a little older, so she was more experienced with it. She pulled my mom aside privately and was like, look, you know, you need to get Colin diagnosed on your own, and then it's a medical condition, and then the school will have to follow the ADA. My parents ended up getting me privately tutored. But one thing, though, that this counselor told my mom, and we're so thankful she said this, but was like, she's like, look, if you tell anyone I told you this, I'll deny it. And she's like, the reason is because if a public school, at least this was in Missouri, you know, 20 years ago. In Missouri, if a school identifies a student with learning disabilities, then they're on the hook for providing him or her accommodations, which I think is the right thing to do. But the problem with that is when schools aren't very wealthy, they don't have a lot of money, their teachers might be told not to do that. And so then it comes in, and it's like there becomes this larger disparity where it's parents that can get their kids tested that have that extra $1,500, $1,000, whatever, and then the kids who can't. And so my parents were able to. And so then I got that personal diagnosis, and then she used that to get me diagnosed or to get me tested again through the school, because the school had to do their own. So it was just, it's just a waste of time and resources, I think.
Wow.
But yeah, it's way more complicated than it should be.
Yeah.
I think.
So when you were going into high school, at what point did you start to sort of think about what you wanted to do after that, like where you sort of saw yourself going?
So I wanted to be a physical therapist for years, and that was because my freshman year of high school, I had this growth spurt, and some part of my quadriceps weren't developing fast enough. And so then my knee would rub on the joint, like, as I would run. And so my knees hurt when I ran, which, you know, when you're 13, 14, 15, however old you are as a freshman, you know, that's not supposed to happen. So then I went to physical therapy, and they fixed it. And I, most things that I do in my life, I do it obsessively. And so it, like, worked really, really well and quickly. And so I was like, oh, there's a problem, and they fixed it. I want to do this. You know, it was one of those things. And then I chose Bradley University as where I went to college because they had a good physical therapy program. And then in addition to that, it was a small school, and they also had a really they had a good disability resource office. And I think Kathy recommended Bradley to me, or to my parents, and so.
And where is Bradley?
It's in Peoria, Illinois. Oh. So it's like halfway between St. Louis and Chicago.
So you go to, well, we'll get to college. More about high school first. So what did you do in high school? I mean, you said you were running, so you were running competitively, like in track competitions?
Yeah, track and cross country.
And so was that a major part of your identity when you were in high school?
Yeah, I think so, because I always had the people I've been closest with or like over the years generally have been runners, especially when I was in school. I've had friends from all over and from, you know, different aspects of my life, but it was always like cross country attracted a certain group of people. And they usually have a lot of energy and can be wild and stuff. And so then that was always something that was really attractive to that. And so those were the people that I think I was really close with in high school. Other things I did student government for a while, but I always just had a problem with authority and didn't, you know, so that didn't, I didn't want to do that after a while. And stuff. Yeah, so like there was a lot of, I don't know. I worked a lot in college or in high school. Worked at a smoothie shop, and it was the best job I've ever had. It's Planet Smoothie. And so I was able to, and that was like really close to school and stuff. And so it was fun, and it was nice to have some extra like spending money and stuff. So that was super cool. But yeah, just I think I was always involved in something. I always needed something to do after school, and like on the weekends and stuff. So I always wanted to do stuff. I think I played roller hockey for a long time too. So it was just always just whatever. I think my parents were early on were like, okay, this kid needs to burn off some of his energy.
Mm-hmm. Were they the ones who suggested getting a job, or was that your idea?
I think I wanted to. I don't know if they suggested it or not. They might have, but I always wanted to work, and I think it was my sophomore year. I waited tables for a while at this like fancy Greek restaurant. And then I was just okay. I mean, I was a busboy, not a waiter, sorry. And that was just okay. But then it wasn't until this Planet Smoothie job, I was like, oh, work can be fun and awesome. So, I did that for a while too.
Any really important teachers or classes that you remember from high school?
There were definitely really important teachers. But I have to say, like, I cannot honestly think of specific like classes or teachers that like were like pivotal in like guiding me to do what I'm doing. But I definitely had like the teachers that just like made me want to learn. I had a lot of those. Whether it was history teachers. I even had a chemistry teacher who was actually, this is now I think about this, he was a PhD, and he would always say, he was always like, I'm a PhD, I'm a real scientist, not like these other guys. And so we're just like, that's a weird thing to say, like, you know. But I didn't realize that. But yeah, so he has a PhD in chemistry or some specific application of chemistry. And his class was always really interesting. I don't even remember his name, but it was always really interesting. But he definitely definitely was negative about, they're not real scientists. And now I guess, like, being a scientist, I'm like, okay, sure, I get it. But you don't have to say that to teachers. High school, I remember being in college and thinking how high school didn't really prepare me for college, but it was Kathy that prepared me. And I remember specifically thinking that, like learning how to study. I think that was like the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And then also learning how to socialize with a lot of different people. We had it was a big high school, and so I think that was one thing. It's also very diverse too. And so I think that was something that was incredibly fortunate, where it was like, it wasn't weird that, you know, the high school was, and I don't know if it was like 50 or 60% white guys and girls, people of color, and whether it was like Indian, black, or Middle Eastern and stuff. And so it was like really, really nice that like we didn't realize how fortunate we had it that like we went to like a really diverse school. Like it was until college when I went to Bradley University where I was like, oh, wow, it's like all white guys and girls. And I was like, oh, it's really white here. What's going on? But, you know, I guess I added to that issue going there. So that's it.
All right, well, let's take a break.